Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. In this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Chase Jarvis, the CEO and co-founder of Creative Live, the world's largest live streaming education company that's had on instructors like Reid Hoffman, Tim Ferriss, Gary Vaynerchuk, Richard Branson, and many, many more. Chase and I actually met back when I was working for him at Creative Live, doing the marketing for their business classes, and I'll be the first to tell you, he has a fascinating life story, and it wasn't always sunshine and rainbows for him. Chase is a multidimensional guy, and before founding Creative Live, he was a serious college athlete on track to head to med school. But at the same time, Chase decided to pick up the camera his late grandfather had left to him. And he began shooting images of friends out skating and snowboarding, and eventually started to get paid for his photographs. Chase built an incredible career for himself as an award-winning photographer, director, and artist. He's done photography work for companies like Apple, Google, Red Bull, Microsoft, and literally dozens of other household brands and sports figures. Chase has contributed to Pulitzer Prize-winning work, been nominated for an Emmy, and he somehow finds time to speak and host his own variety of online shows for his massive social community. Like last week, today's interview is actually one that I originally did for the Inside Sales Summit, an online event I co-hosted with Close.io, the Inside Sales CRM of choice. And in the summit, we had over 8,000 people join us in learning how to become a better salesperson. We had speakers like Steli Efti, Jill Conrath, Neil Patel, Michelle Romanow, Nathan Barry, and more. So if you enjoy what you hear today and want some more of this, then check out the other 54 interviews just like this over at InsideSalesSummit.com. But for today, we're here with Chase Jarvis. And in this episode, Chase and I talk about how to become a photographer. What it was like for him just getting started, how he landed his first paying client, all the way up to eventually brokering six-figure deals, flying around the world to shoot for brands like Nike, REI, Target, and more. We dig into how Chase led the charge building Creative Live, which now has over 10 million students. And the company has raised over $76 million in funding to date from investors like Richard Branson, Jared Leto, and Greylock Partners. We're uncovering Chase's advice for creatives that want to become a successful freelancer or consultant. We touch on his advice for building meaningful relationships with influencers in your field, getting traction with your side projects, and so much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Chase Jarvis. Chase, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Ryan.
So Chase, I want to start back in your early days as a full-time photographer. If you can remember back to those times, who was the first major client or maybe project that you landed that gave you confidence in really pursuing photography as a career?
Well, the first, all of that question hinges on the word major. So I'm going to interpret that myself and say that major was my first one. So it's not about like, there was no, like, when did you know you've made it? There was no tipping point. There was no moment. It was 1,000 tiny moments. And I think that's, you know, for people who are into selling, whether you're selling, you know, art or vision or a widget, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, getting something is critical. And there is never, I don't know. I know very few people who can point to one event. So I think it's important to embed that ethos into your question. And so for me, the most important one was the first time that I realized that there was somebody out there who was willing to give me money for the thing that I was selling. And once you get that, the mentality of, I think, the artist, the entrepreneur, or the person who's helping sort of bring in money and, you know, make a living and or a life, or even if it's just a quota, the fact that you've got someone to give you money for the thing is, to me, that's the best leverage you've got. Because then when you walk into the next conversation, A, you've got confidence. B, you've got a track record. Even if the track record is one, it's a track record. And so for me, you know, I remember like it was yesterday that someone was willing to give me. At that point, it was $500 and a pair of skis for the rights to use one picture in a magazine. And I was like, wait a minute, I just waited tables for like 2 weeks and made $500. And, you know, these skis are $1,000 and this $500 cash. And the way I got this picture was out, you know, skiing and snowboarding with my friends in a cool place. And what if I could build, you know, a sustainable living and a life around that? And I think that mentality is really what I'm trying to underscore, is it's about sort of not just, it's just about your last thing. And you bring that experience into the next cell or the next product or the next whatever.
I like that. So, you know, reframing this question for you in a way that I think you might like it a little more. Have there been any particularly memorable deals that stick out, whether they were, you know, hard to book or it was, you just had a blast doing them? Anything? Jump up?
It's very hard to, if you're going back to my career as a photographer and a director, and just imagine, fictionalize for yourself, if you will, a second, what you could think that the tippy top of that industry could look like. You know, insane budgets. Like, I did one shoot around the world in 11 countries in 17 days, shooting for one of the world's biggest shoe companies, and being able to, you know, work with Olympic athletes in each of those 11 countries, and you know, flying between 70 and 100 people to New Zealand for a month-long shoot where you're helicoptering into the backcountry, you know, every day, and working with world-class athletes, you know, for amazing brands. It's, to me, you know, being able to step into these particular brands like, you know, Apple, like Nike, for example. Not only do you learn a lot about those brands, but sort of a level of acumen, operation, expectations of what great really looks and feels like. So, like the reality of the list of absurd shit is, it's long, it's private jets, it's, you know, beautiful people, it's all of the stuff that you could think on the outside. But I think what's missing is that shit is a 10-year overnight success. There's so much grinding. It's the equivalent of, like, you know, professional athlete or something like that. There's just thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of grinding underneath that. And so if you can make up a story about a photographer and, you know, amazing brands, that's what it's like at that level. So I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but you can just imagine those are a couple scenarios that I'll just, you know, and you've got five helicopters flying into the New Zealand backcountry, and you're in the mountains and on glaciers in the morning, and then you're on the beaches in the afternoons and the evenings, and you can get around something like that. Like, that's, it's really that good.
Yeah, that sounds that good.
It's legit. But again, it's like, what is absent from that narrative largely is how much hard work it takes. And I truly believe that that's why I'm encouraging people to do things that they love, you know, now focused on Creative Live, the whole education platform focusing specifically on helping people do that. And that's, I know a lot of the folks that are in the audience that, you know, you're speaking to here, you know, they get that, but that's the reason that you should do that, because it's hard work. You're going to apply yourself, you know, in order to have any level of success, you have to go, you know, crazy hard at it. So you might as well be doing something that you love.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. So, you know, shifting gears here a little bit, over to the consultants, the freelancers, you know, the creatives, a lot of these people that you do speak to with Creative Live educational stuff, they're out there, they're selling their own products, selling their own services. What kind of advice would you share with them to help, say, their first 10 paying customers come on board? So focusing on that early stage.
I believe that knowing what your ideal customer looks like, even if you're wrong at first, having a vision of that when you go out is critical. I think because when you're starting something, you end up being very, very desperate. You just want something rather than the perfect thing, which, you know, there's a little twist to what I'm saying here, but if you have outlined who your perfect customer is, that's at least a starting place. And then if you pull on all of the things that present themselves in that narrow lane, you know, that you're going to get taken off track, and off track might lead to one of those $500 and a pair of ski things that I'm talking about. But I knew as a budding young photographer, I knew that I wanted to make a living in action sports photography. And so, you know, that's the schema. And then you say, who writes checks for people that are doing what I'm doing? And you have to go to where those people are. So I moved to Steamboat, Colorado. I got embedded in the native sort of ski and snowboard scene. met all the editors, the magazines and the ski companies. And it's just, that's a requirement for, I think a lot of people, you don't have to be there physically as much as you used to, but you have to be a part of the community. I've got a video that I often send people to called The Other 50%. And the short version, you should watch the video, but the short version is that the other 50% is participating in the community. You only actually get traction if people know who you are and they think of you, you become top of mind when they need your particular service. And you can't identify those people unless you know who your ideal customer is and where you want to be and what community feels like home. And you better make that community that feels like home one where some subset of those people write checks for what you do.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I have a little meme with the guy who cuts my hair, and I do a little Instagram video every time I sit down because I think he's a great guy. And his name is Mitch, and I was like, "Hey, Mitch, do you ever start cutting my hair without a plan?" And he's like, "No, Chase, always got a plan." And I look back in the camera and I say, "You know, cutting your hair is like life. If you don't have a plan, it's very hard to know if you've arrived or if you get to where you're going." So, same is true here.
Yeah. And I like that idea of building relationships with the decision makers, the people that are able to cut the checks, because otherwise you can be speaking to the complete wrong person.
For sure. And now more than ever before, it's easy to identify who those people are. You can follow them on Instagram. You can, you know, track their tweets. You can chime in. You don't need to be a weird stalker, but if you're present at the places that they go, if you're in the same community as they are, you're more likely to learn about what they care about and how to position yourself relative to them without being cheesy, sleazy. And, you know, you don't want to try and necessarily close the deal on the first thing, but ultimately you'd like to create a relationship. And it's not true in every aspect of sales, but I find that those relationships where anytime you can afford to have the long view, they always work out better because a repeat customer, you know, it's easier to get more business from the people that are already in your cadre versus having to go out and find a new person every time. So if you can think relationship centric, I think you're always going to be way off and or way on, way more likely to succeed. I'm going to say one other thing. I understand the concept of sales volume and, you know, funnel, and you got to make 1,000 calls to make it whatever. I just want to caution against that. Anyone who's telling you that it's a numbers game, and just be really, really wary of, or go in eyes wide open, because yeah, there is a funnel and only a certain number of people convert. But if you treat everybody like a funnel, a dot in a funnel or whatever, like a marble, they feel that. And especially if you're selling high priced items, I don't know what the folks on the other end of this are selling. As an artist, as a creator, I was selling very, very super high price, like $100,000 to $1 million photo shoots.
And what they're buying is basically air, oxygen, because you haven't done the work yet. They're believing in you as a creator based on your reputation, your background.
And so when you're selling fewer high-priced items, you know, if you're selling widgets, yeah, maybe it is more of a funnel. But if you're selling something that's a high-priced item that is, again, very much about vision, you know, the same is true for entrepreneurs who are trying to raise money. Like, you're painting a vision, and the last thing they want in a photographer is a monkey with a finger, and the last thing they want is an entrepreneur who's just chasing a market opportunity. If you're just chasing a market opportunity, they'll smell that, and when shit gets hard, and it will, 100% of things get hard at some point when you hit any sort of scale or level or acumen or integrity or, you know, whatever. If you're in the top tier of your business, shit gets hard. And when it gets hard, you better well care about it. And you better well, you know, be willing to work through it because your reputation depends on it.
Yeah. And speaking of shit getting hard, moving gears over to Creative Live now, you guys have become an authority in the space of online education, right? Like, there's been moments where it's difficult, but I mean, 10 million students, 1,500 classes, the brand is an authority now. But, you know, looking at maybe some of those moments where shit was hard, or, you know, back in the beginning, you guys didn't start as an authority, right? So, can you look back and point at any major growth levers that you guys experienced with Creative Live and sort of helping it get to where it is today?
Yeah, I can. I'm an advocate of mastery, of mastering a thing. And I don't know what the thing is for everybody because everyone's different. but it's in the concept of mastering something that you're able to understand what that process feels like, looks like, smells like. You realize it. If you have to ask if you've mastered something, you haven't. Because, you know, mastery is basically your ability to create the thing that you can see almost 100% of the time. Ira Glass talks about the creative gap, and the gap is when you see a thing over here and you can only make something over here, there's a disconnect there. And, you know, as a photographer, when you can make the exact picture you see in your mind 100% of the time, you know, you've closed your creative gap to zero. So I'm a big advocate of mastering a thing. And it's in that mastery that you're able to deconstruct what it took to master something. And then you can leverage that more easily into all of the future things. So if you think about Tim Ferriss, he learned how to learn. That was the thing that he mastered. He deconstructed a half a dozen things. You know, one of them was salsa dancing. One of them was online sales. One, you know, there's like four or five things that he learned, and then he learned all of those 80% and then realized that his master skill was learning how to learn. So that's really what the 4-hour work week was about. And certainly the 4-hour chef, it was built on the idea of learning. And now he's deployed that, you know, very successfully. And the same is true with every person who I know who has mastered something. Once you've mastered that thing, it's very easy to be, it's easier to be very successful in other areas. So how that applies to Creative Live is the area of mastery that I chose was photography, because I wanted to do that more than anything. And when you understand that you have achieved mastery in that world, I could then apply that. You could deconstruct what was made my career there successful and then apply that as an entrepreneur. Some of the things that made that successful, one was obviously being great at your craft. You have to put 10,000 hours in, and the 10,000 hours part of Creative Live was building another business before that, the first photo app that shared photos to social networks. I learned a lot about venture capital and people wanting to buy your company and software development and leveraging creativity into technology. So there was tens of thousands of hours there. There was, who are the people in your world? If you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, then you better put yourself around some good people. Because if you spend your time around losers and people who don't actually have high aspirations, and you're going to become what you see. You can't be what you can't see. So how do you get that? And that's one of the reasons that Creative Live exists. So we were very successful right out of the gate, because we basically leveraged my, you know, million person audience into an opportunity to bring education to them. And that was a long process of me understanding what they wanted. So it was hard to get the platform set up. And then we were able to access, connect my audience with the platform that we built. That was actually very easy. Our first class had 50,000 person people in it. Our second class had 100,000. Our third class had 150,000 people. So that was the easy part. And then when you realize that you have to make, it's easy when you're doing one class a month, but what about when you shift gears and you're doing 50 classes a month? That's when shit gets hard, when you start to scale. And so it's, you know, sometimes the first million, well, it, depending on what, you know, what part of life you're in and where, if you've mastered something before so that you can leverage into that, it's going to get hard at different places for different people. You know, specific to your question, I think the second place where it got hard, we had to operationalize that. Like, how do you make this a machine that's on wheels that doesn't feel like you're churning out widgets, because every class has to feel beautiful. And it's with the world-class expert from some of the folks that you named, the Bransons and the Ariane Huffingtons and whatever. But that's when it really got hard, especially for me, because my running a thing that is stable is not the thing that I'm get excited about waking up in the morning to. So I had to surround myself with great people, figure out what were the, you know, people who really enjoy doing that part of the work. So that was a hard part. It was also, I think generally people find it very, very hard to raise money. I think ours was just the opposite. It was very easy. We went from 6 days from meeting Greylock to a signed term sheet. When we did decide to raise our Series A, I haven't heard of anybody faster. And that was because we built a badass business before we needed the money. And I think it's a stretch to say we needed the money, where we decided to take money and scale the business more quickly than we could have just with organic growth. So while that was very easy, it got hard afterwards, because then you're in a different phase of the business and you've got another, you know, very smart, talented, hardworking partner at the table in a Greylock, for example, as your an equity shareholder and a board member. and navigating that, it was a whole new set of challenges. So there's a, you know, I think it's like anything. It's like it gets hard and then you figure it out and then you have some runway. And so you're sprinting and then, just, you know, it's imagine just running up a series of hills. It never stops. There's always a new challenge. If you ask Tony Hsieh from Zappos or Elon Musk or, you know, someone who you think is wildly successful, they're still hitting that. And I just heard that Elon moved back. He's personally sleeping at the Tesla factory now until that thing gets back on rails. So,
wow.
Yeah, he's a multi-billionaire and he's sleeping, you know, he created a little home for himself inside the factory. So take that with a grain of salt.
No, I think that's a great example. Seriously. So Chase, I can imagine you've also been pitched to quite a lot over the years. You've gotten to interview some pretty amazing people as well. Have you ever been particularly impressed by someone's selling ability? Does anyone jump out at you at being, you know, an incredible salesperson?
Oh man. I'll throw it as a category rather than individual humans. I have a couple different directions I feel like I can take this narrative, but to me, it's very hard to resist someone who actually cares about the thing. And that's the difference between, I think, someone who's seizing a market opportunity versus someone who's trying to build something that they don't see in the world, that if it did exist, the world would be better and they would feel great about it. And you know, that's one of the reasons that I continuously try and steer people towards following something that they care about. It's just as easy if you love, you know, horses and you don't love real estate. So what can you do to sell, you know, something in and around the horse world, whether it's right, you know, television rights to ABC, NBC for the big derbies, or versus like eating a shit sandwich every day and trying to sell the 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom Rambler down the street. And there's something happens when you're on the path to doing something that you love. And that is it's visible. You can tell it in the character of the person, how they talk. I'm a fan of Tony Robbins. I think he's incredible. And it's not just that he can keep the rapt attention of 15,000 people in the arena. It's also that he coaches, whether you like his style or not, he coaches the best performers in the world, the Serenas, the Federers, the top pitchers, you know, basketball players, statesmen and women, politicians, the last 5 presidents. Like, he's a badass. And I think he communicates very deeply about how you carry yourself. And what it feels like when you have confidence. And a lot of those feelings in the biochemistry is associated with sort of this mind-body connection. And the science is really clear. If you're doing something that you care about, it's a lot easier to be in that state, that beautiful state. And if you're not, if you're doing something you don't care about, you can smell it. So every people, whether it's investors that are entrepreneurs that are pitching me to invest into their startup as an angel, or whether it's being around people who are wildly talented. I think there's a very, very important distinction I want to make. And one of those, you know, there's a couple of them. One is that it's not like we talk about charisma culture in the West. It's almost trite, and sort of what it's a piece, like passion is a piece of charisma. You know, it's like if people care and you can tell that they're invested emotionally, psychologically into the thing that they're talking about and how to communicate and connect with other people. I think so, you know, when I talk about a class of people who are fantastic at selling, they tend to be connected meaningfully to the thing. And, you know, I think that's a takeaway for the audience. There's another thing that I don't want to go too far down this because it's a rabbit hole, but I think some of the people who are great at selling are, this wasn't just immediately natural, you know, and they're learned behaviors, and it's not like you're cheating. It's, you would coach like the best performers in the world. They have coaches, like whether it's the Serena example that I gave, or a professional pitcher or a professional actor, they have coaches. And what the coaches help them do is help people learn to be self-aware skills. Like, how are you carrying yourself in this moment? Are you meet all the people that you're seeing on TV by and large have had media training, And some have had more, some have had less. Some got their trainings from repetition and say, oh, I flopped that interview or I looked great there. And then they deconstruct it. So the same is true for, like, if you're sitting in the audience right now and you're like, God, I don't have that, or I'm not. Well, how can you reorient around something you care about, sell that thing, and then how can you deconstruct your own performance? Can you be part of a mastermind group or groups like yours where you're actually sharing what it's like to train and practice and be successful? You either practice is inevitable, and you either practice on stage the night of, or you practice a shit ton before. The first few times you do something, it's practice, and where you practice is up to you. So you're practicing with a small group of people you know and trust, and then you put yourself out there in small ways, or are you putting up, you know, you're betting that you're just going to walk in and nail it. I prefer, or the people who are successful, rather, I think, have done it and failed in a small way a lot of times to get to where they are, rather than bet the whole pot.
Yeah, I like that. I completely agree with you. And I'm really glad you mentioned the point too about the best people still having coaches. And I think that's something that you'll see the top performers never, never think they're too good for learning more and learning from other people with different perspectives.
For sure. I think, you know, you get the analogy in the trainer world, for example, like, oh, of course we have a personal trainer. But you know, who's your mental coach? Who's your, you know, work or sales coach, or who's your, even if it's peers, like how do you create that for yourself and or one another? It's a really consistent paradigm across, you know, every discipline.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chase, I want to be respectful of your time. I've got one last quick question for you.
Cool.
What would you say has been the best investment you've ever made in the context of building your own personal selling skills?
I think be committed to the big vision. Like if again, transactional, if you're transactional, you can feel it, you can smell it. Like, what is it? What's the why? You know? And for me, as soon as I found a why, all of the sort of the selling faded away, and it was all of a sudden authenticity that was coming out. And if you're committed to something for the next 2 weeks or the next paycheck or the next thing, hey, I understand you got to eat sometimes. But just be careful of, because it's a trap, that narrative, you know, it's like, oh, I'm just going to do that this one time. You know, I was listening to Tony the other day, and he was talking about this guy who, oh, he moved out west for a job. And in between, when he was driving from New York to LA, the company had a financial pitfall. And when he got there, he didn't have a job. And he said, oh, I'm just going to stay in my car for, you know, tonight and tomorrow night. And then I'm going to go to a job. And then pretty soon he's like, wow, this is cheap. I can stay by the beach. And all of a sudden this dude who's, you know, moved across the country for a job is living in his car. So just be careful of that sort of eroding mentality of, I'm just chasing the next thing tomorrow and then I'll do it. Like, you know, Jane's Addiction song, Jane Says, comes across my mind right now, which is about kicking heroin. It's like, yeah, I'll kick it tomorrow. And I think the concept of deciding to what you're going to orient towards in your life, or what you're selling, or what community you want to be a part of, the sooner you get on that path, like, all the other shit's going to fall into place. And that's not to say that it's not going to get hard, but when it does get hard, you're going to have the energy. So, you know, for me, alignment and playing a game that I actually care about made all the difference in the world. It also provides a level of hunger that it's like, imagine that fantasy that you have of, you know, being in some industry. And if you're actually working towards that versus just a check where you can somehow cheat yourself into this other thing, why not just, you know, apply yourself to the thing? That's, I can't overstate that, honestly.
Yeah. Do shed you love. I love that. Chase, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us where everyone watching today can go to learn more about you, Creative Live, and everything you guys are up to?
Sure. I'd still, you know, steer people to Creative Live. They're basically the creativelive.com, and socially they're Creative Live everywhere. And the same is true for me, / Chase Jarvis at all the social handles and whatnot. Just a plug, like, all of these, there's so much soft skill, so much emotional intelligence wrapped into selling. I think, you know, again, being wary of just the funnel mentality and how can you actually make relationships, what's your body language, what's your, you know, what does it feel like to be around you? I think that is an area that EQ is the new IQ. So being really smart is one thing, but what does it feel like to work, you know, to sit across the table from you or work alongside you? I think Creative Live has the best selection of those courses in the world from the world's top experts and the New York Times bestsellers. And emotional intelligence is a thing that I see across a lot of top performers, having sat eyeball to eyeball with presidents and dignitaries and entrepreneurs and, you know, the best breakdance kids or the, you know, whatever they, you know, I think they have a very high level of emotional intelligence generally. So check that out.
Beautiful. And I second that. There are some great classes on Creative Live. Chase, thank you again for joining us.
Happy to do it. Appreciate it.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.